From sitcoms to specials to sketch and more, CISO is starting with over 20 original programs. So today we're going to play you some clips from the producers, writers, actors, and comedians of CISO original shows. You'll hear stand-up from Wyatt Cenac, Cameron Esposito, and more. Welcome to the CISO C-Show. I'm Andrew Steven. I'm here in studio with comedian Owen Benjamin. Owen hosts the show Why Didn't They Laugh? It's a podcast that looks at jokes in their early stages and examines what works and what doesn't. All right. So anyways, why don't we first talk a little bit, what's this documentary thing that you're doing right now?
I'm doing a thing called 60 Minutes in 7 Days, where I challenged myself to write a new hour in a week. I need to like play little tricks on myself to force myself to write.
Yeah.
There's all these ideas that I've had, and I'm just like, oh no, I'll just do the Starbucks bit. Like in the last minute, you're like, no, I'll do the one that I know works. So when you set a limit, you're like, I have to write 60. So I've engaged with fans of the podcast and my friends and other comedians to send me premises. Because if someone sends me a joke, it's cheating. Like I'm now just a cover band. But like just to trigger ideas of like, do a joke about coffee tables, you know, something like that. And I'm one day in and it's already really fun. I'll be at the Brea Improv November 12th through the 14th doing this 60 minutes in a week thing.
And are you still taking like submissions for?
Yeah. Send me videos. Why didn't they laugh podcast at Gmail? Yeah. Why didn't they laugh podcast at gmail.com or post them right to facebook.com/OwenBenjaminComedy. Whatever you want me to talk about, I'll listen to and I'll try and write a joke about it. And if it makes sense to my life and I can say it honestly, I will say thank you very much in advance because 60 minutes in a week is fucking insane and I will definitely fail.
Do you find that you've gotten better premises from comedians or from like, non-comedians or just fans or whatever like that?
Well, the thing about comedians is a lot of times they're my close friends. So they know me enough to challenge me in ways that they know would be a challenge. Like, my buddy Josh, who's on Silicon Valley, plays Big Head. He's like, you do a lot of jokes about being tall and dogs. How about short people and cats? Like stuff like that. It's like, oh challenge
just
accepted.
Yeah.
Or my buddy Kevin Hickerson, who's the physicist, he told me that I have to write a joke about female inventors that an audience of lesbian inventors would like. That's amazing. That's tough. Like in doing so, I started researching female inventors. They've invented a lot of stuff that people don't know about. So that's the type of thing that I'm talking about where it's like, you know, I'm now learning about inventors, like all the contributions women have done to stuff and how much they didn't get credit for when they were clearly an inventor. Because back in the day, like women would collaborate on stuff and then it would just be like, invented by the dude.
Yeah, whose ever name was at the top of the paper.
Yeah, it's like invented by the one dude, and it's just a little unfair.
That reminds me, going back a little bit, like I used to like I was in bands and stuff like that, and doing music and trying to write songs. Like guitar was always my go-to, but sometimes I'd try to sit down at the piano to write a song just to get that different perspective. And I know you're a musician too. Do you see corollaries between?
Absolutely.
That?
Yeah, when you have to like, it's almost like in music, it'd be like transposing, where you like shift all the notes a half step.
Yeah.
And it's also good to open your eyes to things where like I'll be convinced that I know a truth. And then I realize I don't. This female inventor thing literally changed my mind on certain perspectives about like how women are treated in certain jobs. It just dawned on me. I'm like, imagine being a woman around certain, it's almost like the Confederate flag situation where it's so easy to be like, every flag has blood on it. You know, every flag, the American flag started by committing genocide on the natives. But when you think like, what is it like to be a black person in America walking into a courthouse and seeing a Confederate flag flying? And it's like, then you're like, oh, that would suck. And that's like, we definitely have to get rid of the Confederate flag. And it's the same with like, behavior at work where it's like you can just think in terms of, well, everyone jokes and messes around, but when it's like very just constantly like slightly creepy sexual comments all the time, like that must make you feel like on your heels, you know, like just a little taken aback all the time. So that kind of opened my eyes to things that I never would have thought about, you know, stuff like that.
One of the things I really appreciate about just your humor, your stand up, your personhood, I guess. you think about a lot of things. You sometimes overanalyze.
Definitely overanalyze.
You know, but there's also that sort of adage about, like, you know, nothing makes a joke funnier than explaining it, you know, like the sarcastic thing. Like, and that's what we're about to do here as well. Like, do you find that sometimes hinders you in stand-up, or does it actually sort of enable, like, a new
way? Enables completely. I think it's a combination. You have to, like, have that zone where you can just be just pure animal human and just write what you feel. And then that other zone to scientifically break it down, because the longer you're in the business, the more you realize that, like, you have to account for factors. The thing that, the overanalyzing helps with is, a lot of your instincts are wrong. It's like you look out your window, the earth is flat. You know, you have to, like, it happens a lot with, stand up, especially because there's such a high level of fear response. Where when you're up there and let's say the crowd doesn't laugh at something, it's so easy and common. I see it all the time and I've done it a ton where the comic's like, oh, you can't handle it, huh? You guys can't handle my truth. It's like, no, you just misworded it, because comedy's all about communication. If someone doesn't understand what you're saying, they won't laugh. So the more you analyze it, the more you can break away all these factors that could lead to your demise on there on stage. And then once you've done all that, you can go back to just being not overthinking things. But then the crazy thing that happens then is if you don't let yourself go at that point, you miss tons of stuff that you could have written about. Like, I was crafting this joke all day and I thought I had the punchline. Last night at West Side Comedy Theater. And then I just started, like, enjoying the premise and just talking. And I realized that, like, my punchline came from that. Like, I didn't even have a punchline yet.
Is a joke ever done?
I used to think so, but no. And that's an infuriating part about doing our specials. And I now understand why the Louis of the world will burn ours and be like, I'm never touching that again. Because if you don't do that, you will improve those jokes.
Yeah.
Like, there's jokes that I thought were for sure done. I'm like, this is a finished product. And then 8 years later, you're like, it's way better this different way.
Yeah.
And so that's why if you don't leave, you know, you got to put down the paintbrush at some point, but I don't. Yeah. So
no, I have a friend who's an author and the audiobook version is always different than the print version because it comes out, you know, it's recorded a few months after he's turned in the print version. So he's still always editing and tweaking and changing.
And there's an interesting duality between feedback and your instincts. Cause if you don't listen to feedback, you're missing out. You know, like right now I'm working on a book proposal and I'll send a section to my agent, my manager, my mom, Amy, and like a best friend. And every one of them will have a different favorite section and like strong feelings about it too. It's like, this part's garbage. And the next person's like, by far the best part. You have to listen to outside forces because there is experts. Like, I think it's important to identify experts where you're like, you are an expert at this, so I will listen to your advice versus just listening to voices. Because I think society is creating a culture of false experts. Can I tell you a funny story about that?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so me and Kevin are doing this one-nighter, and he has his PhD in nuclear physics, and this one dude was like, yeah, nuclear energy is really unsafe because like it takes 10,000 years before blah, 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 and if it explodes, it's like 10,000 times the size of Hiroshima. And he goes, he's like, no, like the most deadly has like a 4-day half-life, 30-year half-life is, and then there's 100-year half-life. And other than that, and the most amount it can destroy is like 400 square miles, like Chernobyl. He's doing all, you know, and the guy's like, no, they have proven. And Kevin goes, I'm they. I don't know. So that's it. So identify who your they is. And like, be like, so that is an expert, and then trust that. And if not, trust yourself.
Well, being an expert in comedy, why don't we go ahead and analyze some jokes here?
Great.
So this first one is from Jonah Ray, and it's off his album "Hello, Mr. Magic Plain Person." Hello, off of Special Thing Records.
I want to register a complaint where I don't like the fact that there's a store called TJ Maxx. I can give a shit about the store. It's just that TJ Maxx shouldn't be the name of just some clothing store. It should be the name of the coolest kid we all went to school with. Where you hear tales of TJ Maxx still to this day, 20 years out. You're like, hey, man, you remember TJ Maxx? Fucking A. Ryan, I remember my best friend, TJ Maxx. My best friend, we hung out all the time, TJ Maxx. Don't you fucking tell me about TJ Maxx. Like, no, I'm just saying, you remember doing it. Yeah, don't you remember that one time that he fucked everyone? Everyone. Custodial staff, everyone. Yeah, I remember that. Do you remember that one time TJ Maxx stole the school and then drove it off of a ramp over five other schools? Fucking TJ Maxx. So much cooler than Ross.
That's funny.
That's good.
That's crazy funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like I was trying to work on this legendary, imaginary forefather called Benedict Hammerpants. It's like, yeah, it's like names can kind of define what totally. Your life will be. No, but TJ Maxx joke is super That's funny. Great.
So here's another joke about names. This one comes from Rhea Butcher, and this was recorded live from her stand-up show, Put Your Hands Together at UCB.
You guys, my name is Rhea Butcher. It's not a fake name. It's funny because it's true. I'm 100% butcher than all of you. I fixed all of your carburetors during Zach's set. To be purring like a kitten. I love having this last name. It's super great. How often do you get a last name that is what you are? That's like kind of what last names started as, you know, like if you made shoes, you're shoemaker. If John's your dad, Johnson. If you're boring, your last name's Smith. I like to think about my ancestors in a cave somewhere back in West Virginia talking to each other trying to figure out what our last name was going to be, saying to each other, one day we will have the most lesbian daughter. So from this day forward we shall be known as Butcher. And the prophecy was fulfilled.
That's super funny.
Yeah,
because there is prophecy names like Bernie Madoff.
Oh, I never even thought about that.
You literally made off with your money.
Yeah. Did you ever get into like looking up what your name meant as a kid and like somehow projecting that?
Well, my last name is Smith. That's why that part made me frown. But yeah, my name's Owen Benjamin Smith, and there's an Owen Smith comedian who's super funny. And when I moved out here, so I was thinking about changing my name to Jerry Seinfeld. I'm just kidding. But so I just went middle name. But yeah, Smith is the name that you took when you were fleeing something or you were a criminal.
So
like my ancestors that are Smiths came here in 1710 because they were murderers, which is a good time.
Do you feel you carry that with you now? Or just sort of like, you know, fleeing something, or have you killed someone?
I kill crowds all the time.
Hello.
Fleeing? Yeah. Yeah. You know, I've gotten less fleeing over the years. I think I used to be a big flea guy.
Like you like the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, I'd put a sock on my hammer pants. That's why I have three dogs, because I'm a big fan of Flea.
There you go.
But yeah, no, that joke's great. Butcher.
All right, this next clip is from Cameron Esposito off her album Same Sex Symbol on Kill Rockstar Records.
And if I could leave you guys with one message, it's just that we are different. We're different. We're different from each other. I think that's a lot of what I've talked about tonight. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's what makes us great. I think it's so good that we are different and we are attracted to and interested in different things. I think it's so important for me to be talking about my life right now because we're at this like moment in time in our country. I mean, it's a huge, huge deal. You know, when I get up on stage and I talk about my life right now, this is stuff that's happening. I know that you guys are that the Supreme Court is taking on Oregon's equal marriage, and I know they're gonna keep equal marriage in Oregon. I know they are. It has to happen. It has to, yeah. Because we're ready for that. It's time to do that. It's time to speak for ourselves and educate and talk to each other. You know, I talk about this stuff that's going on in my life because I know that you guys are the people I'm gonna have to live with for the rest of it. And my kids, you know, you're going to talk to my kids and you're going to tell, and I would love you to know that it's okay, that I'm great. I feel great and everything's fine. Yeah.
Everything's good.
I didn't know, you know, when I was a kid or when I was coming out, I didn't know that there was a future. I didn't know what it would look like. And it looks like this. It's fucking hot as shit. Side mullet. Looks like a side mullet. But I can prove to you guys, if there's any fence sitters, I can prove to you guys that our differences make us better. And I can prove it with one story. And I'll leave you guys with this. So I used to be on this party planning committee. And one day, I was looking around this committee room and I suggested what I thought we needed for our party. I was like, oh, I think this party needs whack-a-mole. I stand by that. That is how I want to party. I want to hit animatronic moles on the head with a mallet. But I said, I think this party needs whack-a-mole. Another lady on the committee looks at me and she goes, okay. I believe it's pronounced guacamole. Yes! We see the world in a different way. She and I was talking about a game you could play at Chuck E. Cheese. She was talking about a Mexican appetizer. That didn't make my life worse. It drastically improved it. Because in that moment, I got to see the world through her eyes. I got to understand how she saw me. To her, I am an adult woman who's been walking into Chipotle's for years. Just going like, oh, whack-a-mole's extra? Well, how much are jalapenos? That's who she thinks I am. And she also thinks nobody has ever told me. Like, do you get that part? We're in a room full of people. You know, before she spoke up, she took a moment to look around and say, oh, nobody's gonna correct this lady? Like, in her own mind, in that moment, she is a hero. It's like, the buck stops with me, I can sleep well tonight. I loved her for it. I didn't correct her. I didn't tell her she was wrong. I just said, lady, thank you very fucking much. Woo! And that is how we should treat each other. You guys, I'm Cameron Esposito.
That was great. That took a real turn for the better. Like, at first, I was like, all right, we're having like a nice talk about society. And then it became insanely funny. Yeah, I love that joke. Because it's like that, like, it is valuable to look through the eyes of a dumb person. And the way she's like thinking about it is so funny. Because that, like, that's what I mean about false experts. It's like that lady was not an expert. One of the things I loved about that clip that she just did is she started off. It's that beautiful hot cold turn where you start off with this like deep feeling of like, you know, like you're saying something important, and then you do a rack focus and make it something that's equally as important in showing your point, but on such a different level.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Well, anyways, thanks so much for thinking and overthinking and helping out.
Cheers.
To end the show, we have Wyatt Cenac talking about TV on the internet, which is perfect for CISO. This is from his album, Comedy Person, on Comedy Central Records. Remember to connect with us on Twitter at CISO Show. That's S-E-E-S-O Show. Stay tuned for our next episode. Here's Wyatt Cenac.
But a computer is a television. Let's just close that loophole right now. A computer is a TV. It's called computer TV. I love computer TV. I watch it at work. That's how I keep up on all my stories. And by stories, I mean cat videos. I love cat videos. I love cat videos. I saw this one video of this cat. This cat, he jumps into this box. Then he jumps out of the box. Then he jumps back into the box. And just when you think he's going to stay in the box, he jumps back out of the box. And he does this over and over and over again for 9 minutes and 38 seconds. I know because I watched the whole fucking thing. I loved it. I loved it. And millions of people have watched this video. Millions of people love this video. They've seen this video of this cat jumping in and out of this box. It's really popular. And I was thinking to myself, I wonder how other popular things do on YouTube. And I was thinking, you know who's popular? The president. He's a popular guy. He also makes YouTube videos. Don't know if you know that. He considers himself something of a filmmaker. He does. He's got his own little YouTube channel, and I figured, I wonder how one of his videos would do compared to this cat video. So I went to go look at one of his videos, and it was a video where it was talking to people about what you could do to help those in the Gulf region who'd been affected by the Gulf region. People had watched that video. 500. I felt so bad that I kept hitting refresh over and over again. Because this is the president of the United States, and he is getting his ass handed to him by a cat and a box. That's embarrassing. Like, I feel so bad for him that I feel like anytime he's in town, I just want to run behind him with some cats and some boxes. Like, just throw him in the background. Don't tell him. But just let them hang out in the background and do their thing, because their approval rate never goes down. It doesn't. People love cat videos. Here's how much people love cat videos. I love cat videos. I hate cats! That's ridiculous logic! I hate the Boston Red Sox. I don't go buy season tickets to go see the Boston Red Sox, because that would be stupid! But I love cat videos, and I don't know why. I wish I understood why, and I've tried to understand why. I've spent many hours thinking about why. I figured, you know what I'll do? I'll just read the comments that other people have left on these videos, because maybe that could give me some insight as to why I like them so much. So I started going through the comments, and it's typical stuff, like, you know, ha 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 ha. ROTFL. Which I know that means rolling on the floor laughing, but I like to think it means reaching out to fellow losers. But I'm going through the comments, and I finally see this one comment that stops me in my tracks. This is a comment. It said, "Oh my God, I want that cat. That nigger is adorable." Here's the thing. This cat was not black. It was adorable. That was the right adjective. But I don't know what this cat did to become a nigger. Like, it's just a cat happily jumping in and out of a box. Like, I could understand if it was jumping in and out of a box of Newport cigarettes. That's an adorable nigger cat. That is. Because he's got to be really tiny to jump in and out of a cigarette box. How could you not love that? Or if the box represented the duality of trying to live in a homogenized society, while at the same time struggling to hold on to your fragmented cultural identity, and because those two worlds are constantly in conflict, you must jump between them like a nigger cat.